Okay, we'll try this again. We're trying this again. It's going to happen. It's going to be great. Okay, so.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to American Grifts, the podcast where if you're not the con artist, you're the mark. I'm your host, Oriana Schwint, and today we're going to be talking about Theranos, one of the biggest scams in healthcare this side of Valiant Pharmaceuticals. And to delve into this absolute shit show of a fraud, I enlisted the help of two of the best journalists I know. Ismet Mangla, whose work has been seen in Money, Fortune, Al Jazeera, International Business Times, where I worked with her, and seemingly every other publication. Ismet, how are you doing this lovely evening?
I'm well. I'm excited to talk Theranos.
Yes, and joining us is Sam Thielman, who's over at the Tau Center for Digital Journalism at Columbia right now.
Rich people are bad. Hello.
we're already going to jump to eat the rich.
Yes.
You're quite tasty. It's like Wagyu, I hear.
As somebody observed on Twitter today, it's too late to become a billionaire, but it's not too late to find out how they taste.
Ayo! It's funny because we're definitely joking to anyone listening. We're definitely joking, but
I am not joking. I'm not joking.
But so there's a point soon where maybe we won't be, especially.
Rich people are a valuable source of protein.
It's and nothing else, frankly, because otherwise it's just a waste of carbon.
That's all.
And nowhere is this more better borne out than John Carreyrou's book about Theranos, which is Bad Blood. I had to wait 2 months for this book to become available to me via the Queen's Public Library system because I'm a poor, or at the very least, not a rich. You both bought this book, didn't you?
I bought it because that's how obsessed I was with it. Because I normally check out books from the library, but this one I needed right away. And I devoured it in 2 days. Because I am obsessed with Elizabeth. Yeah. I'm obsessed with Elizabeth Holmes. I can't wait to talk about her, the psychology of her. That's what I'm excited about.
And I just read all his reporting over and over. Yeah.
Oh, and there's a lot there. Okay, so before we get too into the weeds here, we'll maybe some of you listening, one or three of you, haven't read Bad Blood, or you haven't you didn't follow the Wall Street Journal's coverage for months. Maybe you missed the SEC charges or the superseding indictment from the federal government. If you missed all that, Here's what happened. So Elizabeth Holmes, this she's not a waif, but she's got this blonde hair and these giant blue eyes that I swear to God she had artificially widened permanently.
She had her eyelids shaved back a little bit. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God, that's definitely a thing that happened.
I would not put that past her. I really would not.
So in 2003, she dropped out of Stanford and started this company called Theranos. And it was supposed to be a patch for your skin that could diagnose and treat medical conditions. And I feel like this is important because it shows the depth of the delusion from the beginning, because that's fun for a science fiction novel, but it's so out of the reach of our current science.
Idea when she was 19 years old. That's what she wanted, and she was deathly afraid of needles. So I guess that was sort of the genesis of this idea. But yeah, she definitely had very lofty, grand ideas right from the very beginning.
With no medical background is the thing. She had some chemical engineering classes at Stanford.
And I feel like that was a little scam. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, so I probably shouldn't weigh in on that. But
and we'll get into the psychology eventually. But the notion that she was we can do all that with a single drop of blood, and everybody around her going, "Holy shit, you you can? Like, this would be amazing.
Right,
like,
right. So no one else had thought.
Heroin addicts and people with collapsed veins and like, oh my God. Like, well, yeah, no, exactly. Because the, of course you can't do that shit. Like, there's no way to do, but like, it would be amazing for any number of reasons that people who actually understand the processes are very excited about.
Well, and that's, you know, she managed to dupe just reams of people, but she did have these early pitches to investors that had actual medical backgrounds, and they were rebuffed. And she, you know, she went to Pfizer and was like, oh, you know, we created the nanotainer, which, Jesus Christ.
The nanotainer is literally what she called the tiny little vial in which they store the blood. Like, it's a nanotainer.
I'm pretty sure I had a transformer called Nanotainer when I was a kid. I think he turned into Optimus Prime's gun. Yeah.
But that's, well, and that's, you know, there's a reason that no one had done this before. And so, you know, Pfizer was like, oh, okay, we'll let you use the blood that we, you know, run like your blood test alongside our blood tests that we are also running. And they were so unimpressed with the results that they were like, nah, fuck off.
Yeah.
And so it was trials and they were already doing other blood tests. So no one really got hurt for a while. And then, so this keeps happening and she eventually does find all these people to dupe into shoving hundreds of millions of dollars into this money pit. Because that was what it was.
It was $400 million to be exact. That's how much she got in terms of investing money. $400.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I'm looking at their Crunchbase profile now, and it's frighteningly long. It's just a really long list of people who bought in here.
Henry Kissinger and Rupert Murdoch.
Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Betsy
DeVos. Yeah.
There were early Apple folks who were initially involved, like that guy Avi. I feel like it was like a Armenian name. I can't remember his last name. But he
was like a design guy, though. He had no actual medical background.
Right, right. But he had made a ton of money with Apple and, you know, was one of the first, I guess. He was one of the first on her board. And then he, you know, it didn't pass the smell test for him. And then he got out. But like, she attracted a lot of impressive people.
Well, I mean, she attracted, and a lot of them are just appear to think that because they're wealthy, they understand things that they don't understand. Like Larry Ellison is on here a number of times. Like, Larry Ellison is one of the richest men in the entire world, but he's not a doctor. Like, it's amazing to me that nobody,
you can't buy a brain.
You can hire a doctor. That's the thing that blows my mind. Right? You like
that is, I think, a big theme of this whole story.
Right? Well, I think part of the reason. Well, although, okay, we'll put a pin in that. So we're in 2009 ish now, and she's brought on her boyfriend, lover, soulmate, or whatever, Sonny Balwani.
Co-conspirator.
Yeah, well, who promptly began, like, it was a shit show before, but when he joined, it was just like this, environment of abject terror with him around.
He became the enforcer at Theranos, and everyone was, like, terrified of him, but also he didn't know what the heck he was talking about either.
Ever.
A very interesting character, to say the least. A short, portly Indian American guy who I guess made some big money in like one kind of fluke thing early on in his career, and I don't get that pairing.
No, well, I, like, you know, I dated a guy who is significantly older than me, so I kind of get, but like, he wasn't he wasn't that kind of bully. I don't like he wasn't responsible for like, you know, bullying people.
He didn't lead you into a $400 million scam, is what you're saying.
Right.
Exactly. He didn't support my delusions in that way. Like that's definitely one. It's, you know, so he's there, General Mattis joins the board, and then she manages
former Secretary of State George Shultz. That's a big part.
Yes. Which I'm glad that you brought, cuz that's key to the unraveling of Theranos, or one of the keys. But you know, she managed to bilk Walgreens and Safeway out of hundreds of millions of dollars and put equipment in their stores that didn't actually work. And she told, you know, she was telling everyone that the U.S. Army was using Theranos tech in combat. And it was every single thing this woman ever said was a lie. Nothing worked ever. Like, the lab was always like totally a total shit show. I've used that word a little too often already, but no better word describes it all.
It should be the episode title. Like, it just is really amazing how thoroughly it does describe that. And I mean, you know, a lot of it's pretty funny just in terms of like how easily duped a lot of these supposedly savvy people were. But then, you know, with the stuff rolled out in Walgreens, like, not only is that harmful to their, you know, to their customers who think they're getting their blood tested and are not, but it's also like, I mean, this is like a large publicly traded company that's considered fairly stable. Walgreens is like that messes with people's pensions and so on. Like, this, the scale of this is hilarious at first, and then when you start thinking about it, you're like, oh, this is really bad. Like, this has broader economic repercussions. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, not only people's pensions, but they were putting people's lives at risk because people were getting these blood tests and relying on them for accurate results on whether, I think there was someone who maybe didn't get accurate results and then later went on to have a heart attack. I can't remember.
A month later, he had a heart attack.
Exactly. So this is literally putting people's lives in danger. And that's the part I cannot wrap my head around, that like how anyone could do that with and think that they're not even going to get caught, you know, like, anyway. But
amazing to me is, you know, so they make these deals with Walgreens and Safeway, and you know, the company is now worth like it has a valuation of like $9 billion, which is crazy. So all of a sudden, you know, Elizabeth Holmes is being anointed the next Steve Jobs by all these glossy fucking magazines.
She's dressing like Steve Jobs and, you know, wearing her black turtleneck every day. I mean, it's all very bizarre.
It wasn't until, you know, all of a sudden everyone is anointing her the next Steve Jobs, when people who actually knew what they were doing, like actual physicians, for example, were like, no, this doesn't work. These test results are actually causing harm to patients. And they tipped off a blogger who tipped off Wall Street Journal reporter John Carreyrou. And then things got weirder, I guess, than they already had been. You know, I've never reported a story out like this, but I found it just mind-boggling, the counterattack that Theranos mounted against John Carreyrou and who they thought were his sources.
Oh yeah, that was insane. Like, that was a part of the book where I was like, oh my God, this is a downright thriller. You know, when you're reading about how he's being, like, you know, spied on and tailed and threatened by these lawyers. And yeah, I mean, you think that that kind of stuff only happens in TV or in movies, but no, when this kind of money is involved, yeah, it happens in real life.
No, it's, and it doesn't seem to be like, I mean, I remember when Apple had its own like little police force that,
what?
You know, I think they, yeah, I know when they like raided the guy's apartment after somebody, an Apple employee left a new iPhone at a bar and somebody who worked for Gizmodo picked it up.
Oh, like, yes.
Yeah, no. So there's,
oh, yeah, I do yeah. remember that.
So like there's a lot of stuff where people are just like, oh yeah, trade secrets. We can do whatever we want. And trade secrets are the thing that that Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes kept pleading whenever they were, you know, whenever they were pressed on how does this miracle work? Then they're like, oh, you know, we can't reveal our secret sauce and so forth. There's a really good mea culpa by the guy who wrote the notorious Fortune cover story on Elizabeth Holmes. What's his name? Roger Parloff. And and he basically says,
yeah,
look,
I wrote the Fortune.
Yeah, and he just says, look, I look like a huge chump because of this, and the reason, one of the many reasons, and he agrees that he didn't do his due diligence and so forth, but he also says, like, every time I was like, oh, you know, can you please tell me how this works, they would say, well, you know, if we tell you, then, you know, it'll get out, and then we won't have a competitive edge anymore. I mean, the idea that they could just be completely making all of this stuff up, I think, was so like intensely off the wall that it's hard to believe.
This whole thing was also just a real huge failure of journalism. I mean, until John Carreyrou came along and, you know, actually started asking real questions, nobody asked, everybody just, the reporters who were reporting on it just, you know, took it at face value. And it was a lot like, you couldn't report on this company like you would a tech company, but that's how people reported on it.
I think that's a general failure of the business press. And I say this as someone who, you know, covered the media business for a while, and I am just as guilty of this. As in fact, like seeing that was it Forbes or Fortune? I can't remember which one. Fortune. Seeing that and reading the well-deserved shade on that cover story in the book, I was like, oh no, it was like looking into a mirror. Because I'm not saying that I would have done the sort of knob slobby portrait that the Fortune writer did, but we've all done that, I feel like. We've all not dug as deep as we probably should have.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, so I certainly had the same kind of there, but for the grace of God feeling,
right?
when I read his when I read Parloff's mea culpa, because I feel like, I don't know, I remember a particular cover story I wrote a few years ago, actually, over at Adweek, and I guess I don't think I said that it was the, you know, this like hybrid TV show video game was going to be the best thing since sliced bread. But I remember thinking, oh, that, you know, this is cool. And I wrote about it like it was cool. And I didn't feel the need to, like, you know, make a sort of, you know, intense investigation of, you know, every player in the program. But I kind of should have. And I mean, it didn't, when it imploded, it didn't endanger people's lives and so
right.
on, but it was a failure of the same kind. And
yes.
I just think I was lucky enough to have made that with kind of a, you know, lame cable network that had invested a lot of money in something that didn't work. And, you know, you can kind of retroactively be like, oh, well, they dumped a lot of money into it and that was interesting. But that
right.
wasn't the thrust of the story when it came out. The thrust of the story was, oh, this is cool. And it ended up, of course, not being cool. I don't know. It's hard to take those lessons when they come unless it like really sort of does you damage. Yeah.
Yeah, on the flip side of that, though, well, I think the other thing is that it shows how important true investigative reporting is.
Well, yeah.
And how you need, like, the time and resources to do it. You know, like, the Wall Street Journal gave John Carreyrou a lot of time and space to to report this story. And a part of me was very proud. I was just like, yes, this is what journalism should
be. Yeah, go team, for sure.
Like, it definitely gave me something to aspire to. Yeah. Also just made me realize, like, in this age where we're doing super quick hits and turning things around, but like, real journalism takes time and money.
And it's time and money that none of us have. Like, none of us certainly would ever have been given, you know, the opportunity to not churn out one or two stories a day, to actually take the time and the money to fly out to places, to meet with people personally.
Well, I mean, I feel like I have had those opportunities from time to time, and I've just been grateful for them. Like when I first started at The Guardian, they were just super flush, and they wanted to do all kinds of heavy hitting reporting, I'll never forget it. Dominic Rush, my editor, who I still just adore and am close friends with, he wanted me to write about Comcast, which was about to, which kept trying to merge with Time Warner. And he said, I want you to do some on the ground reporting on their sort of corporate life in Philadelphia. And I said, I can call various, publicists I know there. He said, you can do that, but, you should talk to the activists, too. I said, okay, well, what do you want me to do at Comcast? And he said, I want you to see if you can get kicked out of the building. And I didn't get kicked out of the building, but I got I got good interviews with people who I don't think were quite ready for me. And we wrote a really hard hitting story, and the merger didn't go through. I mean, I don't think I personally kept the merger from going through, but like, I'm pretty proud of that stuff. And I do feel like it was a function of having a great editor and a bunch of money and just being told, hey, go down there and punch a billionaire as hard as you can.
And time, time. You weren't expected to file every.
No, I had a staff job.
Two stories a day.
Exactly, and I worked on when I worked at a monthly magazine at Time Inc. like years ago. I also had the opportunity to work on a 3-month investigative story, and that was amazing.
Yeah,
but like all those opportunities seem to be, being squeezed a little bit. But But this shows why they're still so important. Right? Like, this is...
Well, it's just easy for bad actors to take advantage of that, of reporters needing to take the path of least resistance.
No, I totally agree.
Well, yeah. In this case, Elizabeth Holmes herself tried to lean on Rupert Murdoch to kill the story, and, like, in the only decent act that he's ever done on this earth, he declined to do so. He was like, whatever happens, happens. Now, he got to write off all of that busted investment on his taxes. So, it worked out just fine for Rupert Murdoch. But, I'll give like a quantum of credit, I suppose. But, and just a week before we recorded this, Theranos was essentially dissolved, and
Elizabeth Holmes might go to jail. Yeah,
which is incredible. I'm not like a huge fan of jail, but if anyone should be, hit with some,
it should be few. The ratio of rich people to poor people should be different.
Well, we have to talk about like her and what. Just how does one do this?
Yes. Okay. So let's segue to the sort of armchair psychology portion of the podcast, which is, do you think that Elizabeth Holmes was delusional, like to a clinical degree almost, or a total sociopath?
Here's what I think is really interesting. John Carreyrou has said in, I think, a number of interviews he's done, he has never been able to talk to her. They have him, as much as humanly possible. Yeah. And he has said that the one thing that he still wants to explore is like what makes her tick? Like, what makes you think that you can get away with this stuff? I don't understand how she Did she think that eventually her technology was going to catch up and then eventually it would all be true? Or I don't get it.
It's the same questions you have about Bernie Madoff.
Oh, that's,
right?
Oh yeah.
It's true. Like,
it's the, because you do have to go, well, what did you think was going to happen? Like, these people were never going to get their money back.
Exactly.
Like, you were spending it.
But so is this delusion or sociopathy? Because there's a difference between the two, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think there's like a disorder whose name I have not been able to find.
Sounds legit.
Where you think you are. Yeah, right. No, but it made the news a couple of years ago where it was just kind of a permutation of narcissism where people think that they're just convinced that they're competent.
Mm.
Like, they're convinced they can figure out and know how to do just anything. Like,
it's
not called
being a man. Oh! Yeah, no.
Being a man is one of the symptoms, I think.
Sorry, that was rude. I don't actually believe that. Carry on. Sorry, Sam.
Oh, that's all right. I'm definitely a man. I've been accused of being a man many times.
In the beginning of the book, he talks about her. I guess he interviewed like family members and whatnot, and talked about how she had very sort of grand ambitions, you know, from the beginning, and how her parents instilled in her that she needed to like make a difference in the world. And then, you know, she also said she didn't want to be president. She wanted to be a billionaire.
Right.
And like,
so sociopath, that's
maybe, I mean,
that's the answer.
I just want to like, I want someone to interview her and talk to her and see like, what the hell were you thinking? Like, did you think that you were just going to continue pulling the wool over everyone's eyes? Or did you think you would eventually catch up and make this technology work? Because the other interesting thing is, remember that she was very controlling throughout the history of her company, where she siloed different teams so they could never communicate with one another. She, if anyone said so much as anything resembling criticism, which in a healthy company you would talk about, you know, if things aren't working or how we can make them better, but you know, she squelched that. Like, she would not, she basically said, oh, you're not being a team player, and people were fired left and right. So that makes me think she also knew that she had to like actively hide stuff. But I'm like, how long did she think she had to do that for? I truly don't get it.
I mean, the thing that makes me think that it's more than just garden variety narcissism and the sort of weird hyper sort of self-esteem that afflicts many very rich people is her various public appearances. Like, they're so disturbing, just knowing what you know about her. Like, she just fucking lies.
every breath and
just like very sincerely and with sort of like, you know, wide eyes and like quotes from Gandhi and shit, and you're just like, this is
right.
you just get this little like kind of lizard brain tingle watching that stuff, and you kind of go, this is not a, I don't want to sit near this person.
Oh boy.
Well, the eyes are one thing, and the reason that we think that, you know, she could very possibly have had some,
no.
I don't actually think that she had eye widening surgery, but I do think that she purposefully kept her eyes held very wide open at all times, was the artificial lowering of her own voice, which I understand why she would do that. Like, I've never had to go through this world as a woman with a high-pitched voice, although I think it's getting higher as I age, which sounds weird. But you know, the reason people don't take me seriously isn't because I have a high-pitched voice. So I get it, but, like, she went too far to, like, how did anyone ever think that that was...
Well, yeah, I mean, people who aren't familiar with this, there was an anecdote in the book wherein she, you know, she has a very low voice. And if you look her up on YouTube or anywhere, you will.
She's talking like this, essentially.
I mean, it's jarring. It's really jarring to listen to. But there was this one case where I think there was an employee or someone who yes. she had hired recently, and they were talking, and she actually got really excited. And when she got excited, she sort of, it seemed like she let her guard down yeah. and her voice went, you know, up, like more to a normal register. And that was a really interesting, you know, sort of anecdote in the book, because it was like, it dawned on this person that she's doing this yeah. on purpose.
That's you a know? Weird thing to do. Yeah.
And also, what a cartoonish little, like, come on, no. He walked into her office late at night to say something yeah. to her or whatever. And she was excited about something, and she was talked in her normal voice, and he was like, what? But that's a villain in a Superman cartoon.
Right. Yeah. That's so true. But, and going back to what Sam said about like the Gandhi quotes or whatever. So day after, or the day that that John Carreyrou broke his first story in the Wall Street Journal about, you know, all this bad shit going down at Theranos, he goes on Jim Cramer's Mad Money and gives him an interview. And that interview, if you haven't seen it, you need to go on YouTube and watch it, because it's really, it's astonishing. Because Jim Cramer starts asking her about, you know, this article was very damning, this first one that he wrote. And he starts asking her about the particulars of it. And she basically says, you know, this is what happens when you try to change things. First, they don't believe you. Then they think you're crazy. And then finally you change the world. I'm, you know, like paraphrasing the quote, but it was just like, that was one of the first things out of her mouth. And it was such a bald-faced lie wrapped up in this whole, like, you know, feel good thing.
I also want to know who's like, I want to know who is booking talent for Jim Cramer.
Cause that, oh my god.
Like, yeah, no, but he just seems like if you want to jerk somebody around, you make sure to go on Cramer and like lie to him publicly.
Right. Yes.
Like, I guess when he told everybody to buy Bear Stearns during the financial crisis, that was the moment when people were like, "Oh yeah. So we can do him. We can do Cramer. That'll be okay."
God, that was 10 years ago, too. Well, it's interesting because I just watched...
Yeah, no professional consequences for that one.
Nope. And then, well, because I think there's something off with him. I remember seeing, you know, clips back in the day. But when Jim Cramer is interviewing John Carreyrou and he sounds so aggrieved and so he just like can't believe that capitalism has failed so spectacularly in this case, as though all companies are just pure as the driven snow and Theranos was some kind of anomaly, like, you know. And first of all, like, I don't know, Cramer's speech sounds a little suspect. There's something a little drinky couldn't really finish sentences. maybe he had some kind of cerebral hemorrhage or something.
but
he's slurring like, General Mattis is a villain in this story. Like, oh, surprise. Fucking, really?
Yeah. Mad Dog
Mattis. Couldn't have seen
the
that one coming.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah. He's not the good guy. It's just literally the only not awful thing about all this was like Henry Kissinger losing money, but
and like a hilarious sum of money, like a genuinely funny sum of money that, like, when I'm upset, I think about how much money Henry Kissinger lost.
But it won't affect him. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I bet it bothered him. I bet it bothered him more than bombing Cambodia.
Well, that's a low bar.
He's got,
It's true. Yeah, it is a low bar.
That's, you know how there's the like emotion spectrum with the faces that you're supposed to help kids who have trouble with emotions. For him, it's bombing. One end is bombing Cambodia, and the other is losing a couple $100 million.
Losing money on Theranos.
I didn't expect to make so many jokes in this very serious exploration of... Well, okay, so, like, going back to what did she think was going to happen, like, you both are more well-traveled than I am outside of the U.S. Do you think that... Because it felt like she... You're right, it felt like she had this need, this pathological need to make the technology happen now. And I know that, you know, 2003 to 2016 is like a pretty long period of time, but considering the length that most R&D for drugs, new medical technologies take, like, that's not an inconceivable time frame. But she felt like she had to make this happen now. Do you think that's something uniquely American?
Huh, that's an interesting question. Maybe. It does seem to be a very, like, I think part of it, too, is this interesting time period that this was happening in, too, right? Like, it's a period of a lot of innovation and change and, you know, that is happening in the U.S. So I think it can, you know, drive this sort of need to be a part of that landscape.
Well, yeah. I think too, yeah, I think that's exactly right. And just to elaborate on that slightly, I think that, as you say, this was a really kind of fertile time for these startups and so on. And I mean, people, I remember this really clearly because people would say, oh, you know, somebody sold 1/1000th of their company for $1,000. That means that the company is worth $1 billion, and then that would be reported as like fact in the Wall Street Journal. Yes. That this company is worth $1 billion, and as though it was like the market capitalization based on share prices on the New York Stock Exchange, and in fact it was just what the receipt said on Crunchbase, and that is the degree of faith that communicates in people who have every possible reason to deceive you is, I think that actually is fundamentally American.
Right.
Like, I think the notion that, well, of course a rich person wouldn't lie to me.
Oh, definitely.
Like, what could they have to gain? it's not unique to our culture, but we indulge it to a unique degree, I think. That's my feeling on that.
Yeah. That's probably a better way of putting it, actually.
And parallel to this is also the idea that, like, all these wealthy people obviously invested, and I guess it's sort of this this snowball effect, right? Like, you think that how could all these brilliant people be wrong? Like, you don't think deeper into, well, do they really know what they're talking about when they're investing in a company that's, you know, aiming to like diagnose 240 diseases as her like little
blast. with a single drop of fucking fingertip blood.
But I think that's like, we do kind of have that. I find myself doing stuff like that all the time where it's like, well, sure, this must be safe. Like,
it just makes me think of The Simpsons where they go to Cuba and Fidel Castro asks to see the $1 trillion bill, and Mr. Burns is like, oh, I don't know. And Homer says, Mr. Burns, I think we can trust Fidel Castro.
Well, you know, I think you guys are hitting close to the idea that I have, which is, the idea of indulging this instinct to move fast and break things that is essential to not just American culture, but Silicon Valley in particular. And because Theranos was always viewed as a tech company rather than a healthcare company, yeah. I think. That seemed to be the way that it was positioned and branded, and the way that it was covered in particular. And I know that there are some really great tech reporters out there, but they're actually somehow worse than media reporters when it comes to drinking the Kool-Aid.
Well, it just wasn't considered a serious beat for a long time. I mean, it was just nerds writing about computers until it was, you know, nerds writing about the, you know, the stock market and, you know, syringes. Like I think, again, this is less a actual quality of the product being marketed, as you point out, and more a sort of easy marketing niche to get into, where people, as you say, are far more credulous in their reporting on it. You know, there's a lot of stuff you could just call a tech company in the hopes of, you know, getting free press from people who are easily impressed.
Well, and I think she also had a lot of, she had that tech Silicon Valley mentality. Because remember, in the book, I think Carrie writes about Larry Ellison and how, you know, he was co-founder of Oracle, but like in the early iteration of that company, they would ship out software that was like, you know, littered with bugs, and eventually they would get it to like where it needed to be, I guess. But right. You know, you can't do that with healthcare, right? But
no.
And he, obviously he was very successful, well, but like she had that, maybe she had that mentality. I don't know. Like,
I think she absolutely did. And also her goal was never to actually help people.
Yeah.
Like she might say it was, but if she really wanted to help people, she wouldn't give a shit about how much money she made. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not like, make some money from helping people, but like the amount of money that she felt she was entitled to.
And she wouldn't be putting a product.
Just goes far, you know, she wouldn't have been so shitty about the patents. Like, there's a whole patent war that we haven't talked about because, I mean, there's just too much.
There's so much. This story has so many layers. I mean, I don't even know if we'll have time to talk about George Shultz and his grandson who.
Yeah, sorry, Schultz's, but I think there's just there's not enough time in the world for all there this.
But he was basically the whistleblower, and his grandfather like didn't even believe him. I think they still have a strained relationship because of this. Which
like, you know what? Crusty old dude, like never trust a crusty.
Here's another question. Why were all these crusty old dudes so enamored with her? Because I have watched interviews with Elizabeth Holmes and I don't get it. I don't see I'm not like, wow, I want to give this woman all my money and like put all my faith in her. Maybe because I already know the story, but no, I don't get the charm. But like the way she was always described was dripping with charm and able to like, you know, basically just charm the pants off of George Shultz and Rupert Murdoch and everybody. Like, what was that?
White girl magic. That's what that was. It's white girl magic.
Yeah, I mean, I just think she's like she's like a pretty young woman who like has read the Jack Welch book. Like I think that's these dudes' ideal woman,
right?
Is someone who like looks like Elizabeth Holmes but can talk Six Sigma,
right? And that doesn't work on me. So
which I literally thought, by the way, Six Sigma. I didn't know that was real. I thought that was a joke that 30 Rock made up.
You thought 30 Rock had made it up? Yeah.
Until I worked at a professional place of business and people said it with seriousness, I was like, oh no. but no, I really, you know, as someone who like had to charm a whole lot of middle-aged and crusty old white dudes with lots of money, I see exactly why they were so enamored with her. She had all like because they like girls that are spunky and feisty, but not too spunky or feisty.
And who
emulate, you know, the all-time greatest whatever inventor, whatever they think Steve Jobs was in their mind. You know, a female version of Steve Jobs, like, I can hear the erections all the way 3,000 miles away.
Yeah, no, but it does, it is, again, it's an amazing sort of indictment of, you know, the various elite money holders who think so much of their intelligence that you can get this far with them by dressing up as Steve Jobs.
Like, literally, Steve Jobs cosplay really is the key to success in this fucking world.
Yeah.
How? Okay, we don't want to, like, belabor this too much longer, so, like, we'll get to the we'll get to the movie portion, because, yes, this is going to be a movie. Adam McKay is directing it, which is really cool, because I've watched the movie The Big Short about 6 times, I think. It's so good.
The Big Short owns, yeah.
Oh, I've read the book about. I actually just reread the book, like, I finished last night.
It's a great. I mean, it's really true to the book too. Like, it has.
Oh, really?
It has like a.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there. I think I will definitely be going to see this movie, and I rarely go to the movies. I always see stuff later.
Right. This will be worth 60 or, you know, what, $20 by the time it comes out.
Yeah. My like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Jennifer Lawrence, I have to say, that's pretty amazing casting, inspired. Just in terms of physical attributes. Like, I can see her playing her now, and I even think she'll be able to get the whole like deep voice thing too.
Well, part of me, like, Adam McKay is an amazing director, and I think he's going to do an amazing job with this. But part of me kind of wants to see the David Fincher version.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, I'm fascinated. I don't know when it's gonna come out, but. And didn't you say that the woman who wrote The Shape of Water is writing the screenplay?
Yes, which is really interesting. I did not see The Shape of Water. Did you guys? I heard it was good.
I actually did not.
I did not care for The Shape of Water.
Oh,
and I love Guillermo del Toro. Oh. I love him so much, but I hated that flick. You know, I don't think it was. I don't think it was the writing I disliked as much as the kind of twee direction. I think Jennifer Lawrence is an amazing choice for this, because she has the kind of, like, her whole persona is the cool girl or whatever.
And, white girl magic, she's got it.
Well, and just, yeah, but like seeing her do that as a villain, I think is great. Like, that's a really good idea.
And I think what I'm so excited about for the movie is I want them to explore, and maybe they'll fictionalize it a little bit, I don't know, but I want them to explore the, like, that's the thing. I read another piece about how no one can crack the, like, psychological aspect of this story. Like, no one can figure her out. And really get into, like, what makes her tick. No one has gotten really a true interview with her.
Yeah.
So I'm just really curious how they're gonna flesh out her character in that way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
What would you guys, is there anything that you would tweak or in the story, like, you know, or like stuff that you would leave out? Because they're gonna have to cut like half this book.
And there's so much, like, we didn't even talk about the scientist.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they just make her a full-blown, like, Hannibal Lecter. Like, I just don't want her sympathetic at all. I don't want anybody to, like, come away going, oh, well, I can kind of understand why she did that. I just want people to be, like, horrified and disturbed and to, like, go as her for Halloween to scare each other.
Oh, God!
What are they gonna do for Sunny? Like... Hooray, hooray, we've got more, you know, South Asian... Is India considered South Asia?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, great.
Yeah, more South Asian representation, and it's this piece of shit.
Well, one of the things, like, there was this whole thing in the book, and I think John Kerry wrote some articles about it, too, about the scientist who was on her staff and... went into a deep depression, you know.
Ian Gibbons, yes.
Yes, and eventually ended up committing suicide. And I mean, we're not sure of the reasons for that, but it certainly seems like, you know, his role at Theranos didn't help things. And I just feel like there's so many weird little stories like that. I mean, not to trivialize a horrible tragedy, but like, how do
No.
we weave all of these things into that? You know, I feel
That's
like.
why this feels almost like it should have been like a 6-episode HBO
Yeah.
limited series.
I could totally see that.
Yeah, because then you have the act, you can actually explore Ian Gibbons' story and Erica the lab tech. Wow, this I'm normally not this good at remembering names because I haven't cracked the book open in like a week. So
I'm impressed.
Good work.
congratulations me. But yeah, that's
We know
I
when
won. Yeah,
filmed and
when
coming.
it's coming out. At the very least, like I would wager late
Probably like 2020,
2019.
maybe, or yeah, or 20, yeah, late 20.
'Cause you know that they want to get it out in time for Oscars. So like if they can't get it done
Oh, definitely.
late 2019, then they'll push it to 2020. Although, Jesus, the passage of time is very strange.
Hopefully she'll be in jail by then.
Oh, definitely. Again, not a huge proponent of jail time, but she, you know, she.
I want her in prison.
Yeah, she
Lock her
needs.
up.
Yeah. Oh,
Mean,
no.
prosecutions and sentences for white collar crime, even if they don't include prison, make me really happy. So, you know, I'm all for the way this is going.
I would love if we could bring back the
Yeah,
stocks. Just, you know, a day in the stocks. I feel like
pilloried, yeah.
that would be perfectly. And you know, you can't. Maybe some really soft fruit could throw. Nothing that could actually hurt.
But like really old tomatoes, like really old.
Really, really old. From a distance of maybe like a
And
foot
from
or
like
two.
February.
You just kind of maybe
Yeah.
drop it on her. Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah.
Okay, so I feel like we've established some good direction for Adam McKay, who I'm sure is listening to this.
Yeah.
Hi, Ed.
So I think we should end on something perhaps even a little light, or to me this is a joy. This segment, which is this week, is going to be the
Oh
grift
boy.
of the week, which at some point we're going to have to do an episode about, or I don't, you know, whoever feels like talking with me, an episode must be done about the feminist wellness
Oh
fraud.
God, I'm
But this is going to be sort of an amuse-bouche, because which is I only know because I've
right.
watched Top Chef. But Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop were, I guess it's Goop, not Gwyneth Paltrow, but it was slapped with a $145,000 fine from the Orange County District Attorney over the Jade Vagina eggs, which is it's so
I just
fun. Goop was has to pay $145,000 fine. That's
Right,
it.
and they have to offer refunds to anyone who wants them. I know that seems so low, doesn't it?
What?
Well, yeah.
I'm not past vagina eggs.
So these are jade eggs that you're supposed to stick up your cooter, and they're supposed to be like, I can't talk about it without
They do
Jade,
everything. They
I'm
fix
sorry.
your hormone levels,
J
and
Jade like the
I
rock,
don't know.
though.
They're yes.
Yes.
And there's also the rose quartz egg, let's
So
not
that
forget.
all is that also for
Oh yes.
your lady bits?
Yes. And they're supposed to like do everything from like prevent depression and, you know, regulate you and balance your hormones and increase your bladder
Well, I
control and
just
all this
I feel really
ridiculous stuff.
left
And people
out.
bought them.
I'm really sad about this. Like, is there anything I can jam up my ass that'll like help me feel better about
You could get a
my
$60 jade
$60.
egg that will cleanse.
Oh, I've clicked through here. It says these are pre-drilled for string add-on. These are just Benoit balls, but sold individually. Like this is terrible.
Afford the jade egg. The quartz egg is a little cheaper. It's
My wife is sitting
$50.
across the couch from me and laughing at me.
And they sold 3,000 of these.
Well, that's what's like, it's, you know, promising as it's, I feel like buying that should put you, like buying that and actually expecting something other than a UTI is grounds for some sort of list. You should maybe.
There's a woman who's a gynecologist who writes for the Times, like,
oh, yeah,
occasionally, and super angry about you know, Gwyneth and all her crazy claims, and it's funny to read her stuff about this. But if anyone has not read the New York Times profile on Gwyneth Paltrow,
so good.
Taffy Agner profile is really good.
Taffy
Bradisher Agner, yeah, it's wonderful.
Absolutely fantastic. And so hilarious. I found myself like laughing out loud multiple times.
I mean, you know what? I will say, like, props to Gwyneth for getting us to talk about up our holes publicly without being super embarrassed about it.
We're getting three, I guess.
Usually ashamed.
They stole three.
I'm embarrassed.
Oh Lord. Are they still selling them, or are they going to pull these now that they're getting all?
It's kind of unclear to me, because there's nothing wrong with selling them, right?
No,
as long as you don't claim that they can cure.
I guess, but they
claim.
Yeah, they're falsely advertised medical devices.
Oh, you know what? I read that they said that the claims that they've accompanied to go with their sales or whatever, now they've sort of watered
them. You can definitely still buy them. I'm clicking add to bag,
I'm so excited for your wife to see why you've been.
So the vagina eggs have not been yanked.
Live a little, Sam. Live a little.
I just wanted to say that.
I think what's funny, though, is I don't think this is going to slow, you know, Goop down at all. Like, sure, they've watered down the claims a little bit, but people buy this stuff. That's what's so crazy.
Yeah. Well, and it's part of it is that it's an outgrowth of the, like, utter failure of the pharmaceutical industry to conduct adequate testing of their products on women, so you get like all kinds of mysterious side effects from you know, over-the-counter medications where your, you know, doctor tells you after 6 months of weird symptoms, oh yeah, you probably shouldn't be taking antihistamines.
Don't get me like, started on that, women's kind health of thing. And like the way that we have been failed by,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Forever for and sure. ever. Forever and ever. Which, again, leaves a hole for Goop that she can then stick a jade egg into.
A vagina egg. Exactly. Yeah, a vagina egg. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Leaves a gaping orifice for Gwyneth to.
Yep.
Jam rocks in.
Excuse you, crystals.
Expensive rocks.
Crystals.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Crystals.
Yes.
Eggs are pre-drilled for string add-on. We recommend using unwaxed dental floss.
I feel like we should leave this on unwaxed dental floss. I feel like that's a good place to leave our discussion on Theranos. Right. And
that is a
a good place to leave it is the yoni chakra. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys again for joining me, and thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.